You're listening to Marketplace Weekend. In the past few weeks, there has been a lot of news about Russia, from the DNC hacking to the intelligence community's conversations with President-elect Trump about Russia. President Obama recently issued new sanctions against the country. We wanted to take a step back, though, and get a better sense of the economic and political relationship between the U.S. and Russia and what might change now. We reached out to Matthew Rojansky. He's the director of the Kennan Institute at the Wilson Center. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
I want to zoom out a little bit because I think a lot of people are hearing all sorts of things about Russia. So from a layman's terms, you know, what's the picture on the ground for the regular Russian? Are the oligarchs kind of off in their own world or off in the world of those who kind of interact with state-run oil companies? What do regular Russians see?
Well, Russia, of course, is an enormous country, literally the largest country on Earth, 11 time zones, 145 million people. So it's never possible to say what Russians think across the board. But a lot of, well-informed, I'd say reasonably well-off Russians, the new middle class, as relatively small as that is, but you're still talking about, a dozen plus major cities across the Russian Federation where you have a considerable number of working professionals. Those folks, I think, tend to be very, very tuned in to world affairs. I would even argue, on average, much more so than the average American citizen. And part of the reason for that is that Russia is very sensitive across the board. I mean, this is from the very tip-top of the political and economic elite, down even to your cross-sectional, factory worker, farmer, small village resident, very, very sensitive about status. And the issue over the last 25 years has been an enormous loss of status, literally within the lifetime of working-age Russians today, including the Russian leadership. And so a lot of what Russians think about when they look at the U.S.-Russia relationship, global issues, international security issues is, what role is Russia playing? Are Russia's interests being respected? Is Russia's status being respected? And that's one of the reasons at the end of the day why Vladimir Putin has remained so popular in Russia, above 70%, even 80% popularity ratings consistently, for a decade. I mean, these are inconceivable numbers by almost any Western
yeah.
political standards. And they're not really manipulated. These are real numbers, and it's because Russians look at what he's achieved in terms of really enhancing Russia's status and the degree to which Russian interests have to be considered by other major global actors, and they're very pleased with that.
We don't do a lot of trade with Russia. It's a very small number. How would you describe our economic relationship with Russia?
Very small. That's basically right, that we don't do a lot of trade. Overall, it's less than 0.5%. I think even less than 0.1% of total U.S. trade volume with the world. We tend to do well in certain distinct areas, and that's part of the reason why when you see sanctions imposed on the Russian economy, and this really came out, of course, in the Tillerson hearing, it tends to be certain industries that are most concerned about that because they get hit very hard. But it really doesn't hit the American economy across the board. That's very different from Europe, of course, because Europe has a much larger trading relationship with Russia, roughly tenfold where the U.S. was at its height.
How has the American-Russian relationship changed over the course of the Obama presidency?
It's changed, you could say, in the same way that U.S.-Russia relations evolve under almost every president, arguably every post-Cold War U.S. president, Clinton, George W. Bush, and Obama, all set out to have this very, first of all, personal relationship with their Russian counterpart. I refer to the Bill and Boris show of the 1990s. Remember George W. Bush saying he had looked into Putin's eyes and seen his soul.
Yeah.
Right. And then of course, Obama with the reset and thinking that Dmitry Medvedev was going to be his partner in totally changing the dynamic of U.S.-Russia relations. And then every one of those administrations ended in a substantially worse place than when they started in terms of almost every measure, security, democracy and human rights, trade and economics, almost on every measure. The fact that Obama has not been an exception is unexceptional. Do we necessarily then write it off and say, okay, well, the new administration will end up where previous administrations have ended? Not necessarily. I think the sad fact of U.S.-Russia relations is that we tend to repeat the same mistakes over and over. one of my favorites is not recognizing that Russians have their own interests. Imagining that we can sort of come into conversations with Russians, lay out what we think their interests are, show them where the overlap is, and then expect them to sign on the dotted line. And we keep doing that, and it really doesn't work. So I think just more effective diplomacy in general. And I was actually pleased with the Tillerson statement, the written statement that he submitted and that he read at the beginning of the hearing. It simply said, you know, we failed to recognize that Russians don't think the way we do, at least not on all issues, not all the time. That's a good sign, I think, for negotiating with the Russians, which is something he has a lot of experience with.
When we think about the U.S. relationship with Russia, you know, we are no longer this sort of Cold War enemies. But when we think certainly about economics, it seems to me, and I'd like you to kind of expand on this, that a lot of what we are doing is kind of bank shot stuff to affect our allies within Europe.
Yeah, there's definitely been a big element of the United States as kind of the voice outside the room. So I think it was Archimedes who said, give me a long enough lever and I can move the world. The problem for the United States is that we seek to use economic sanctions as a lever, but in our case, it's not very long, and we also don't really have a place to stand because, as you pointed out earlier, we really don't have an economic relationship. Over time, we may actually do damage to the system that gives us whatever leverage we have. So, for example, the global financial and trading system, in which we have a very privileged and fortunate position, we are definitely sending a signal to the Russians, and then the Russians kind of amplify that signal to many others, especially emerging economies, but also emerged economies like China, that, you know, really we can't play within this system safely because, you know, the United States is going to come after us and they're going to pressure the Europeans into coming after us as soon as they disagree with us about anything, whether it's human rights or some kind of national security issue. And so they will increasingly hedge against that system. And I think the comfortable assumption that we'll be able to use economic leverage indefinitely to achieve any foreign policy objective is probably a wrong assumption. And I think Russia's busily proving that.
Well, what do you think that then means with the sort of various rounds of sanctions that have been imposed, both the ones about sort of Ukraine and Crimea and this latest round?
I'm reminded of, I think it was something that Don Rumsfeld said about the Iraq invasion, which is, you know, you go to war with the army you had, not the army you wish you had.
Yeah.
And the same is true with this foreign policy challenge of sanctions, which is the new administration is going to come in with the sanctions policy that we have. Part of that is what the previous administration has already put into place by executive order, what the Europeans have done more or less in concert with that, and also what Congress will legislate. And Congress is, literally has pending legislation now, bipartisan, both chambers sponsoring, so you know, I would say very likely to pass, that will codify, that will legislate sanctions against Russia on Ukraine, Syria, and a number of related issues. So that's what the administration will inherit. And I think that the challenge is going to be, if you're skeptical about sanctions, and I have been skeptical, of course, the Secretary nominee Tillerson has been skeptical, you nonetheless don't want to give up something for nothing. And so I think you want to maintain a tough bargaining position where you say, look, okay, you know, we're willing to consider relief of sanctions, but it's got to be in exchange for something. So what is the off-ramp from the pressure strategy look like, and not just concessions for nothing, and not just indefinite pressure. As long as we disagree with you, we're going to maintain this punishment strategy, because the concern there would be 50 years later, it's Cuba and some enterprising president in 2065 says, gee, it's time to lift the sanctions on Russia, you know, gets a round of applause and very little was achieved.
Matthew Rodzinski, director of the Kennan Institute at the Wilson Center. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lizzie.